WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A lot of people came to work a little bleary-eyed today after staying up late to watch the Oscars. No surprise, The English Patient won 9 awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. Our film critic John Powers, who is also film critic for Vogue magazine, seems to be constantly traveling around the world, going to film festivals of every sort. But he watched the Oscars on TV with some friends and colleagues in Manhattan. We invited him to share his thoughts on the winners, the losers, and the telecast. I asked him what he thought were the best and worst moments of the telecast.
Well, actually, I liked it when Cuba Gooding did his little speech thanking everybody. The show actually started off quite promisingly with Billy Crystal's opening monologue, which was very good. I think he's probably the best person to do this in years and years and years. And the bit where they cut him into the Best Picture films was actually rather funny and clever. And then Cuba Gooding Jr. won, and he was energetic. And I was in a room full of people, and everyone was saying, all right, this is going to be really, really good tonight. This is going to be fun. And then gradually the evening started to draw on and on. And people you never want to see, like Celine Dion, not only performed one song, but two.
And, you know, there were, go ahead.
I was going to say one of the sort of funny subtexts of the evening were sort of swipes at Barbara Streisand. There seemed to be lots of cutting to her at certain moments. Like, I think when they were explaining that Madonna was a good sport to come and sing. They cut from that to Barbara Streisand as the bad sport, who wasn't going to come and sing her song.
What was the story behind that?
Well, I think that, Barbara's a difficult woman, and when she wasn't nominated for her film, she was not at all likely to come and sing her song at the Academy Awards, whereas Madonna, I think, is a trooper and likes to play the trooper. So that, whereas Barbara likes to play the delicate artist, Madonna likes to play the Italian mama who can't be beaten by anybody. So she will come and sing the song, and Barbara never would. And of course, Oscar likes to punish her. I mean, Barbara never gets nominated for Best Director. So there were lots of reaction shots of her looking rather unappealing or unattractive, or when people were making comments about her, cutting to her, and she didn't look very happy.
Let's get to worse moments. John, what were some of the low points for you?
Well, I'm not sure this is a televisual worst moment, but I thought that when the kind of standing ovation for Billy Bob Thornton from Sling Blade was one of my least favorite moments of the entire thing, just because not only did I not like the film, but it was the sort of classic Rocky moment where this small-time person wins the award and people rise to their feet to applaud him. That was one of them. I think bringing David Helfgott out was not a moment I was particularly happy to see. I mean, it was kind of nerve-wracking to see whether he would actually make it through Flight of the Bumblebee.
It sounded like a very uncoordinated performance.
It did. It wasn't a good performance of Flight of the Bumblebee, but at least it was a completed performance of Flight of the Bumblebee. But somehow there's also the strange way that Hollywood now likes to drag out someone who in one way or another seems sort of disabled for these functions. Last year they brought out Christopher Reeve. This year it's David Helfgott. There's something unseemly about it.
The English Patient swept, which of course nobody was surprised at. What do you think that says about what Hollywood thinks of itself now?
Well, in a way, what it says that Hollywood thinks of itself is that the best movies in the world are still Hollywood movies. Because for all the talk of The English Patient being an independent film, which it was in financial terms, it's certainly not an independent film in the terms of the great sweep of Hollywood, which is this is the classic Hollywood film. The films that people compared it to were things like Lawrence of Arabia. It has epic scope. It made people travel to lots of countries. It had big star performances. It had romance. It had action. It had expensive production values. And traditionally, those are the films that win, partly because most of the people who vote at the Academy are in one way or another are members of crafts. And so they appreciate how difficult, logistically, it is to make films like this. You know, so that Braveheart won last year because everyone knew it's really hard to film in the Highlands. It's really hard to drag all those cameras out there. Look at all those extras. The weather's terrible. And Mel made the movie work. Here, they're thinking the same thing. It's so darn hot in the desert. The lighting is so tricky. What are you going to do with all those extras? And all those people know that. And then when the film actually serves traditional Hollywood ends, which The English Patient does, it makes it a Hollywood film. You know, if 20th Century Fox hadn't pulled out at the last minute, reportedly for wanting Demi Moore in the Kristin Scott Thomas part, it would have been a Hollywood film. So that I think it's important not to overemphasize what an independent film The English Patient is.
Billy Crystal called the Academy Awards Sundance by the Sea because there are so many independents nominated for Best Picture. And, okay, so most of the independents are actually, most of the independents represented were really owned by big studios. But why do you think there were no more genuine studio films that were nominated?
Well, I think the major reason there were not many studio films nominated was they simply weren't very good. That there was a time that probably went from about 1920 to maybe 1990 when it was part of the studio culture that you always made a few films every year that were supposed to be ennobling, that were supposed to be good for people, that were supposed to represent high art values. And as Hollywood has gotten more and more corporate and as more and more lawyers and agents have taken over the industry, there's less and less attention paid to making that kind of film. So a film like The Crucible, which I didn't like very much, used to be one of the would be the kind of film that there used to be a lot of at Christmas time. This year there were only a couple of them. And that's partly a switch in the culture of Hollywood. I would connect that, incidentally, to Lauren Bacall not winning the Oscar, which was, I think, last night's big surprise. I think, you know, among people who bet on the Oscars, she was the surest person in almost any category.
A Lifetime Achievement Award type of Oscar.
Yes, a Lifetime Achievement Award. Throughout my entire life, I have watched people being dragged out to win the award for something they weren't very good in. You know, John Wayne winning for True Grit, for example. And when she didn't win, I thought that might have marked the final end of traditional Hollywood sentimentality. That this was an award ceremony where Courtney Love came out and presented an award, but Michelle Pfeiffer didn't. You know, where Chris O'Donnell was present, but Jack Nicholson and Warren Beatty weren't present. So you have it skewing toward younger and younger people. And at the same time, the one surefire winner didn't win, and she was beaten by a French actress. I mean, it wasn't just that Lauren Bacall lost to some hot Hollywood star. She lost to a lovely French actress. And what that said to me was that there's no longer that great concern to sort of honor old Hollywood. And that's linked to the fact that there's no longer the great concern to make the kind of award-worthy films that Hollywood used to make.
Well, English Patient won for Best Picture. John, of all the movies that were released in 1996, what film would you have voted for?
Well, that's actually a very difficult thing. I guess of all the films that were released, I probably, you know, would have voted for something weird and offbeat to win rather than The English Patient. You know, there's a Hong Kong film I would have voted for, but of course it never had a chance. You know, I might have voted for the film Breaking the Waves, which I think was a very, very good film. And of the nominees, I think The English Patient is probably the one that I would have wanted to win. I normally complain bitterly about the winners. And this year, I actually think The English Patient is a perfectly fine winner. I don't think it's a great film, but it's an enjoyable film, and it has lots of traditional quality values. And, you know, in some ways, it's kind of daring.
What ways?
It's daring in the sense that it has cold actors at the center of the film. I mean, that doesn't seem very daring, but having Ralph Fiennes and Kristin Scott Thomas anchoring a love story of a film is a rather bold thing to do, partly because neither of them are great stars. But in addition to that, the film took the risk of making us deal with essentially unlikable people, or at least people who don't draw us in. Traditionally, Hollywood wants actors who pull us in. I mean, Kristin Scott Thomas is not Sandra Bullock. And Kristin Scott Thomas is very forbidding. Ralph Fiennes seems sort of neurotic. You know, probably in the old days, you might have had a pairing that was something more like George Clooney and Sandra Bullock, where they want the audience to love them a little bit, whereas this was kind of icy in the central love story. And I think, in a way, that was a kind of a daring thing to do.
Well, let's run down some of the key categories and compare your thoughts to the Academy's. Best Supporting Actor, Cuba Gooding. What do you think?
Actually, Cuba Gooding Jr. is a good choice. He's, you know, the biggest Christmas hit, and he's the most enjoyable thing in it, and is energetic and alive. I mean, you know, there's the kind of traditional sort of award going to people of color that is usually a supporting role that he got. But I didn't have any feeling this year that that's what happened. I think people thought this is the most enjoyable performance in a movie we really want to honor. And he was even fun accepting the award. I mean, I was perfectly happy to see him win. I mean, I think one of the great sort of sub stories to that is that I'm told that he has replaced his agent since making Jerry Maguire, which I think is such a marvelous irony that I hope the story is true.
Best Supporting Actress.
Well, what was interesting was that as they were reading off the nominees, I mentioned to people that I thought that there were basically four really good performances and the Lauren Bacall performance, and everyone thought Lauren Bacall was going to win. I mean, Juliette Binoche is very good. I mean, I probably myself might have gone for Joan Allen, who I thought was extremely good in The Crucible. I have this theory that often with the Best Supporting Actress, they vote for the Academy, which is largely male, votes for the person they most want to sleep with. And Juliette Binoche is extraordinarily beautiful. And so I'm not surprised to see that she wins.
John Powers is with us. John is film critic for Fresh Air and film critic for Vogue magazine. We'll talk more about the Academy Awards, but first, John, let's take a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the Academy Awards. With me is John Powers, Fresh Air's film critic and film critic for Vogue magazine. Best Actor, that went to Jeffrey Rush for his performance in Shine. What do you think of the winner, and who would you have liked to see win?
Well, my major thought was that it's a scary thing about actors, and because, I mean, Jeffrey Rush had also won the Screen Actors Guild Award, is that actors and Hollywood in general, that they actually think that he's better in Shine than Tom Cruise is in Jerry Maguire. You know, I mean, I don't think Tom Cruise is the world's greatest actor, but that the Cruise's performance in Jerry Maguire, I think, might have been one of the best ones there. That a lot, the performance of Jeffrey Rush was an incredibly gimmicky performance. And, you know, one of the things that you discover over the year, I've discovered over the years, is that Hollywood, of course, loves gimmicky performances, but actors and actresses also love gimmicky performances. So you can almost always bet that when it comes to Oscar time, whichever performer gives the most one-note performance, that's the person who's most likely to win.
The other nominees for Best Actor were Tom Cruise for Jerry Maguire, Ralph Fiennes for The English Patient, Woody Harrelson, People vs. Larry Flint, and Billy Bob Thornton for Sling Blade. Who would you have voted for?
I think I probably would have voted for Tom Cruise, just because this is his best performance in years, and it's a very enjoyable performance. The other person I might have voted for is Ralph Fiennes, who's very good in The English Patient. And there's some sort of neurotic quality to Ralph Fiennes that kind of, you know, gets on my nerves. I mean, I just want him to be happy just once. But he and Tom Cruise, I think, give the real serious performances. And then Woody Harrelson with his awful Jimmy Stewart impression in The People versus Larry Flint. And then Billy Bob Thornton's one-note performance in Sling Blade. And Jeffrey Rush's one-note performance in Shine. I can't imagine how those were nominated as good acting. I think all three of those performances are not simply not prize-worthy. They're not good acting.
A lot of those performances are what a friend of mine likes to call stunt performances.
Yes, no, it's complete stunt performances. And what is strange is that the emotional range of them is so incredibly limited that I can't see how actors in particular can look at it and think, what a great performance. On the other hand, I think what people like is that they're giving stunt performances where the audience is with the character the whole time. So one of the problems that Ralph Fiennes' character presents in The English Patient is that he isn't always likable. If we switch over to the Best Actress category, the same thing is true. This might have been the best collection of Best Actress performances ever. You know, there were four really good ones, I think. And then Frances McDormand, who actually is a fine actress, and I have no objections to Frances McDormand in general. She was on screen 32 minutes, which is barely a Best Actress size of a role, and she basically did two emotions. She did "Let's make fun of Minnesota accent" and "Let's be nice while making fun of Minnesota accent." And she's very good in doing it, but by comparison with, say, in particular, Emily Watson in Breaking the Waves or Diane Keaton in Marvin's Room, there's no comparison. Both Keaton and Watson were so much better, so much more interesting, so much more heartfelt, that it's incredible to me that people who actually see lots of movies would think that the McDormand performance was the best one.
There was a huge amount of affection for her. I really like Frances McDormand a lot. But, you know, when her name was mentioned, there was just this, like, whoop of applause that swept over the Academy. And I was wondering if you had an idea what was behind that special affection that people there seemed to have for her.
Well, I think it's partly that I think she's a very nice person to begin with. And I don't mean that in any condescending way. I mean that in the best way. Because most of the people you saw last night on that show are not nice people. The second thing is that
spoken with authority.
Yes, I've met many of them, and they are not nice people. The second thing is that I think she's the kind of actor that people like to see win things. I mean, she's been around for quite a while. She's done lots of good work. She honorably performs, usually in sort of character roles. And this is sort of the great big performance of her career. And for her to take it and run with it and do well is something that really makes people very happy. Also, I think a lot of the applause came from the sort of younger, hipper part of the crowd. Because there still is the old break between young and new Hollywood. And in young Hollywood, I think Fargo was a film that people were really wild about. I think older Hollywood didn't quite get it, thought it was too violent and so forth. So you had all of that going on. And what was also interesting was that Emily Watson got the second biggest applause. And I think that's because a lot of people there realized that she had the most difficult role of all the people. I mean, in Breaking the Waves, she's basically on screen for 2.5 hours, and every scene rises or falls on her performance, and it's a complicated performance. And so it's like she and McDormand are almost like sort of opposite ends of how you do a screen acting. And so I don't want to say that, I don't want to seem to be attacking McDormand, because actually I'm quite fond of her myself. I just think it's interesting that this year you had sort of two one-note performances by people who are barely in the films that they're starring in. Because Jeffrey Rush is only one of three people who play David Helfgott in Shine. He's probably not on screen more than 30 minutes either. I mean, together, both of them are probably on screen for about an hour of about, you know, of 3.5 hours of film.
Let's look at Best Director. The nominees were Joel Coen for Fargo, Milos Forman, People vs. Larry Flint, Scott Hicks for Shine, Mike Leigh, Secrets and Lies, Anthony Minghella, The English Patient. And Anthony Minghella won for The English Patient. What'd you think of him winning? Who would you have liked to see win?
Well, I think probably the best directing was probably, you know, either Mike Leigh or Scott Hicks, I suspect. I probably would have put in Cameron Crowe for Jerry Maguire as well, simply because one of the things that people don't realize about film directing these days is that you often have to direct your way around the difficulty of your lead actor. And to get the best Tom Cruise performance ever, perhaps, is not an easy thing to do. And what Cameron Crowe did was he took an actor who almost never connects with people and got him to connect with all the other performers in the film. And that's actually a very skillful piece of directing. By comparison, you know, the Minghella stuff was good, sort of proficient, not very interesting filmmaking on extremely good material. I thought it was funny that Minghella didn't win for best adaptation from a book, which is probably what he should have won for, because it's not easy to adapt The English Patient. That's a difficult thing to do. And he managed to make a film that people really liked, that people responded to, out of a very poetic, difficult novel. Whereas when it comes to just sheer directing, visually, Joel Coen from Fargo is a much more precise visual director that, using the limited resources of just the snowiness of Minnesota, Coen actually does far more with that snow, symbolically, visually, and all the rest, than Minghella does with the desert, for instance, in The English Patient. So I suspect he really probably didn't deserve to win it, and there were better people. Even Scott Hicks from Shine, which is a film I don't like very much, he managed to put across material. I mean, and the film is beautifully shot. It's edited really nicely. It moves right along. And it's only afterwards that you begin to wonder, like, why isn't this film very good, really? And that means the director has taken material that's kind of insufficient and really put it across very skillfully.
You know, in the second half hour of our show today, we're going to be talking to J.G. Ballard, who wrote the 1973 novel Crash, that the new David Cronenberg movie is based on. And so before we let you go, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts about Crash.
When I saw Crash last year at Cannes, it was being presented as the great scandal film. And what struck me about it was that it isn't particularly scandalous because the style of it is so icy and cold that I can't imagine people really feeling upset about it. My own sense of it was that for about the first 30 minutes, it's really wonderful. I mean, it probably has the most intense feeling of any film I've seen in the last year in that 30 minutes. Then my feeling was that the films began to get sort of redundant and that it was one of the few films I've ever seen where you would actually have people committing sodomy after a car crash, and your thought was, boy, this is really boring, the film sort of loses its energy about half an hour in and never quite recovers, and it seems to be the same scene over and over again. I know that... You know, when I talked to David Cronenberg about this, he said that actually there are subtle differences just in the positions of the body, the kind of sex, who's guiding whom in the sex scenes. But my own sense of the film was that it lost steam about half an hour in. Having said that, it's one of the few films out there that has an idea to it, and it actually has a strong artistic sense to it. So it's actually a very interesting film. I've seen it twice. And I can't really recommend it in a way to the average viewer, but I think it's one of those films that people will be talking about 10 years from now, and they almost certainly won't be talking about Sling Blade or probably even Secrets and Lies in the same way that they'll be talking about Crash.
Well, John, thank you for talking with us about the Oscars, and I hope you got some sleep. They lasted really late.
They did last really, really, really late.
Well, thanks for being with us. John Powers is film critic for Fresh Air and for Vogue magazine. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.